Hi.
This is Take Charge Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist, clinician assistant, and Carol Peterson, pharmacist.
Listen, learn, and I hope you enjoy the show. Bye.
Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corrine Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health. Welcome back. I'm here with my co-host,
Carol Peterson.
And we're going to talk about a subject very important to all of us because it is the number one cause of death in the nation. And yet, there's some little-known facts that can reduce our risk by 80%. Can you believe that, Carol? 80%?
It's spectacular. It should be on the headlines of the New York Times.
And it's been known for over 40 years, and yet it's not information that's readily disseminated to all of us, so we can all participate and protect ourselves, men and women. So, Carol, where should we begin? This is a big topic because, first of all, we have to explain and focus on the problem, then the solution, and then how do we do this ourselves and make it better for ourselves?
Well, I think having some awareness is a big thing. You and I have talked about strokes in the past in women, and I'm suddenly finding women, friends of mine in my age group, we're a little older, are getting strokes.
Wow.
And I know it's rather sobering. So I'm, particularly because these are people close to me, I'm trying to understand what they were doing that put them at a higher risk for stroke. And even more importantly, how do I take care of myself and reduce my stroke risk?
Well, you know what they say and not say, this is a statistic, that someone in the U.S. is having a stroke every 40 seconds.
Wow.
Wow, so, is right.
I know we're chasing like cholesterol, but we're forgetting the stroke.
Exactly.
And it can be heartbreaking. When somebody has a stroke, they can recover in totally or in part and have some residual speech and eye problems, motion problems, balance problems, or they can be quite handicapped with a paralysis. Usually one side of the body has some form of paralysis, and it can be crippling. So you can go overnight from being a fully functional human being to somebody who's got to have a caretaker. This is serious business.
Now, we know that heart attack risk increases with diabetes, with hypertension, with obesity, with smoking. Now, is this 80%, or I just looked on my book, it's 88% reduced risk of a heart attack and stroke. Does this apply to those people who deal with these problems only?
No, I think it could apply to just about anywhere. So the topic we're going into is an observation about blood viscosity. And this occurred in Jonathan Wright's Green Medicine newsletter in August. and he is bringing out some of the information we know about that. And it's really something that's quite observable. If you've ever gone to have a blood draw for tests, for instance, it's pretty easy to see if your blood is flowing slowly and thickly. Jonathan Wright says, like, the difference between tomato sauce and tomato paste, to give you a visual. It gave me a strong visual. Or if your blood is flowing easily. And if it's happening when you're having a blood draw for blood testing, just think about the impact in your body when your blood is thickened. It has trouble moving around in the body. Maybe the hypertension you're experiencing is not something all by itself, but it's your body's attempt to squeeze down blood that's already too thickened and not moving too well to try to get it into those smallest blood vessels, your capillaries. And when you get down to the capillary size, they are so, so tiny that only one red blood cell can get through at a time.
And that is if it's bent.
Right, right. It has to be flexible, too. That's another thing we can talk about. So he goes on to write about how powerful just this one thing is, and the one thing is donating blood.
Wow.
So what happens when you donate blood is they take about a pint of blood, and then your body has to make up for the loss, and the loss includes both making new red blood cells, which takes about a little time, and restoring the fluid into your veins and arteries. So that's why if you go and give blood, they will advise you to drink a lot that day. They will make you stay put and ask you to drink extra water or juice or whatever they're serving to make sure you have enough fluids aboard to start putting more fluids back into your bloodstream, the result of which now you're carrying around blood that's a little more flexible and has lost some of the viscosity. This has also been known for quite a long time that blood donations decrease the risk of heart attacks and strokes. It was thought, for example, that women have a somewhat delayed risk. Their risk starts after menopause, after their monthly blood loss stops. So for a long time, we have been thinking simply that there's a secret in losing blood, both by menstrual cycles and by giving blood. Or maybe as we evolved, men were in battles and fighting for their lives and getting injured, trying to find food, that this tendency towards blood viscosity was a protective mechanism so that you wouldn't, rather than bleed to death, your blood could get viscous enough quickly. And there were so many opportunities to bleed to death, you needed that protection.
Well, I want to go back to women because many of us don't really think. I mean, if we say breast cancer, it puts terror into the hearts of all women. But if we say heart disease, it's almost like women don't need to pay attention or don't care to pay attention. It's not fearful to them. And what we're seeing is that heart attacks and strokes are very rare before menopause, except in women on birth control pills. So whenever you see a stroke or heart attack in women who are premenopausal, the majority of time is they're on some type of artificial hormone therapy, which increases the vessel spasm. At one time, we thought that we were looking at women who were not getting heart attacks. So we thought that estrogen was a precipitator in the fact that women didn't get heart attacks. And to some degree, that is correct. But mostly what we're looking at is women and their menses, in the fact that they lose blood monthly, so they have to build new and flexible. Remember I said it takes one bent over red blood cell to go through a capillary? When you have a new cell, their membrane is flexible and movable. As the cells get old, just like everything else, they stiffen. They begin to stiffen naturally. And by the fact that we're losing blood every month, we're creating new flexible cells that are running through our veins and arteries. Then after menopause, it takes about 10 years, plus or minus. And after 10 years, gee, girls, we get to catch up with the guys in heart attack risk and stroke risk. And that's one catch up I don't think we want to be at.
No, and the other thing that happens, and maybe it's because women don't tend to malinger as much as men, their first incident of heart attack or stroke tends to be fatal. Men seem to have a more tendency to have a second, third, fourth chance after this, well, albeit not in tip-top condition. So it's an issue. It's probably what leads to the issue of we're not paying much attention to it. We're paying more attention to the chronic nature of something like breast cancer.
Exactly. And women have finer or thinner arteries going through the heart. So when you have a blockage, it's a serious blockage, and it's easier to completely block circulation to that area.
There are labs available that you can do to measure blood viscosity, and if you find a laboratory that can do that for you, it probably would be a very good idea. However, having known your blood viscosity in general and realizing it's a risk, there's a number of things you can do outside of the bloodletting principle. You can do other things to make sure that your blood viscosity improves. Now, let's just go back to the birth control pills. They're well known for causing blood clots. And what you have there is a synthetic estrogen and a synthetic progesterone or progestin. Right. And this interferes with your normal blood coagulation factors, and it puts you really in a high estrogen state. The progestin is supposed to be there to balance, but it can't possibly because it's not the right molecule. Progesterone is the right molecule. So there is data in the literature to show that when estrogen and progesterone balance each other, the risk of coagulation is less. So birth control pills, to my alarm, have been promoted as hormone therapy for menopausal women. So realize that if you are stopping menstruation and you're going on birth control pills, you are choosing two negative factors that will predispose you to having problems with blood coagulation, and it could lead to a fatality. So that's another thing. If you use hormones properly balanced, my concern is very much so for women who've had a hysterectomy. We have this urban legend promoted by places like North American Menopause Society, American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, the Endocrine Society. They tell women if you've had a hysterectomy, you don't need progesterone, and they proceed to give women estrogen only. So there's a deliberate withholding of a balance that should be provided to those women. In fact, there's probably about 700,000 hysterectomies done every year. And one of the most common reasons is that women are having trouble with heavy bleeding at each cycle. And that heavy bleeding is induced by too much estrogen. They have already in a situation where their progesterone is simply not enough, not up to the ability to hold down that overstimulation of estrogen from whatever sources. So the progesterone's becoming deficit, the estrogen becomes more active, you build up bigger and bigger layers, you have massive bleeds until you can't stand it anymore and your doctor volunteers to take out your uterus so you won't have that problem anymore. However, the basic problem is left unfixed. This is a low progesterone woman. You take out the uterus. And then most doctors will put women on more estrogen, making the underlying problem even worse, with no thought to what it has to do with your blood flow.
Carol, that's wonderful how we can literally tie a large portion of what we see back to a degree of hormone balance also, but it's not the only cause, not at all. There is a cholesterol cause, but why? Is cholesterol the problem, or is it a solution that our body is making to help solve a problem? What we're seeing is that it is a solution. That what is happening is the viscosity, the thickness of the blood, the density of the blood, the difference between tomato juice and tomato paste, is creating pressure and irritation on the inner walls of the arteries. When that happens, it creates an inflammation. And when that happens, the body then makes and or collects and or releases more cholesterol, because cholesterol is a soother on the inner veins and arteries. So what we have to look at as patients or as people are not statins to lower our cholesterol, because that is similar to doing a hysterectomy when people are low in progesterone. It's grabbing after the symptom rather than going and addressing the cause. What we have to do is bring down inflammation and thin our blood. And we thin our blood in multiple ways. We thin our blood with fish oils and a low dose vitamin E are very effective to thin the blood. We thin our blood with a blood draw. When my patients come into my office, I very often, and this is a small thing, very small, but it's regular, and small and regular turns out to be quite effective. I draw 1 or 2, that's 8 cc's or 16 cc's of blood. It's not a pint. It's a small amount every time I draw blood and throw away 2 of them so that the end result is there's a reduction in blood volume and blood viscosity. Not large, but if it's regular, it's beneficial to the patient. I also encourage adequate fluids with minerals, and Carol's favorite is salt, but working with minerals can be very effective in terms of holding fluids in our circulation. If the fluids have no minerals, what happens is that those fluids don't hold. They move right through the body. And that's a distilled water. Distilled waters can be very effective for certain detox protocols, but they're short periods of time. And what has to happen is that for daily living, waters with some minerals can be much more effective in hydrating you than waters without minerals.
We had Dana Cohen on our show talking about her book on hydration and how important it was. And it's really easy to see when you look at your skin to see if you're hydrated or not. Your skin should be plump and resilient. You should be, if you pinch it, it should pop right back into place and not just sit there. Just a little test you can do for yourself. And the resolution really is the minerals. Dana, in her book, promotes a lot of juicing with vegetables and fruits, which will contain the minerals. Or there are many, many supplements you can find now on the market that will give you extra minerals. And, of course, including my favorite, a good salt. Dr. David Brownstein, in his book about salt, recommends 1 to 2 teaspoons per day of a good whole salt, like Himalayan or real mine salt, to give you a balance of minerals. I'll tell you a story, Corinne. Years ago, I visited Dr. T.C. McDaniels in Cincinnati. He was, at that time, in his late 80s, he was still practicing medicine. He had a weekend lecture in his office, and he taught us about zeta potential. And this is something I remembered from my pharmacy school days. Zeta potential is a little the power of repulsion. And so what happens when the zeta potential drops, your red blood cells cling together.
Mm-hmm.
And you've probably seen pictures
of this
in a dark field microscope. You get red blood cells stacked together like a little
stack of coins.
Yeah,
it's like called Raylow, where the cells are all clinging together.
So this is a test some people actually provide in their office, a visual test. And if this was your blood and your red blood cells were sticking together, that is a sign of dehydration, and it's a sign of extremely low minerals. And it is a sign of dehydration. So what you can do is take mineral supplements, and the red blood cells will soon be nice and repelled from each other and nice and plump and round like they should be looking. And when they're in that shape, that round shape, they're able to get squeezed into the capillaries and reshape and to get into those little circulatory areas. When they're all stacked up like coins, bang, you don't get any circulation to those capillaries. So that's a problem. One of the things Dr. T.C. McDaniel did was put together what he called his Zeta powder. And for many, many years, I wondered, I used his powder, but I didn't know exactly what was in it. And I finally found out it's a combination of potassium salts that he used for his patients. So very, very interesting. You can get these salts to this day, even though he's passed away. You can find them for sale on a website dedicated to Dr. T.C. McDaniels.
And it's potassium salts?
Yeah, 3 potassium salts.
So how does that affect?
So what it does is increases the zeta potential. You need the minerals to increase that repulsive energy between each cell so they don't stick together and they get to be apart and plump out again, back into normal.
Now, standard thing that we hear every day from everyone, from friends, family, from the drug companies, is about statins. So, Carol, what's the percentage reduction in heart attacks from taking statins? This is going to be an interesting comparison.
Well, it is interesting. There's various books written by doctors who have elaborated on this story. The cholesterol hoax, the statin disaster. There's a website called thinks.com or org trying to let people know that statins are not the answer. We've blamed cholesterol, this patching, this innocent bystander patching up our damaged vessels, blood vessels, which have been damaged primarily because of our sluggish blood. We're blaming cholesterol, and we're trying to eradicate cholesterol, and it really doesn't have the benefit we're looking for. It does not reduce the incidence of heart attacks and strokes. There was only one study done in men, and it was only 1 in 200 men seemed to have relief from a second heart attack that has been shown to be preventative at all. Using statin drugs do not extend your life, do not extend your quality of life, because they're problematic with side effects. I'd like to talk about another thing, is proteolytic enzymes. Part of the clotting process that happens is the step with fibrin to fibrinogen, and you get a fibrotic clot. And the first thing you would have happen to you in an ambulance, if you were on the way to the hospital with a stroke, they would find an IV line and inject a proteolytic enzyme into you in order to help break up that clot of fibrin. And you can also use proteolytic enzymes as prevention, or even if your prevention was overwhelmed, you at least have some on board to help start to unravel those fibrous clots. And we've talked about some of those before. Most famous in this class of proteolytic enzymes are natokinase and lumbokinase. And natokinase comes from fermented soy called natto. And the lumbokinase actually comes from earthworms. And there's a huge body of data, particularly in Asian countries, on both of these for helping keep your blood less thick and help prevent strokes. And as I said before, it is even used therapeutically to treat you after you've had a blood clot on your way to the hospital, ideally as soon as you can have it happen. The natural hormone you have in your body to moderate all this clotting stuff is heparin. And for a while, and I don't know what's happened to it, we started to use a lot of heparin in the low doses to counteract an abnormal clotting situation, which can be happening in some people as part of their genetic heritage, that they would have a tendency to have a weakness in some of the clot formation.
Now, Carol, we use a form of a anticoagulant that's recommended by everyone, just like statins are, and that's aspirin. And that's an old remedy. It's acting in the same way as these proteolytic enzymes, but it has risks. And the risks can be intestinal bleeds as well as brain bleeds. And this is not unusual. It has been known to happen and does still happen with a regularity. Whereas when we're dealing with a proteolytic enzyme, and taken appropriately, just like everything should be, we're not dealing with risk factors. In Asian cultures, they get these proteolytic enzymes through foods, through fermented foods, through fermented soy. They eat it regularly. And so that acts as a natural balancing effect. In the States, we don't eat as many fermented foods, which I think are very important. And we talk about those all the time here. All the time we're always talking about fermented foods and why they're so important. But we don't take them to that degree. And I'm going to recommend to take them. And we really have to look at that aspirin intake. The risks are high with aspirin, and they're low with natokinase. They're low with streptokinase. Both of those are proteolytic enzymes. Carol?
Well, there's another thing to consider, and it's one of the most popular drugs of all kinds. Coumadin, or warfarin, has been used as an anticoagulant. Should you actually have a stroke, you'd probably be put on this as first line. We've got some other newer anticoagulants with dangers of their own. Works on a little bit different place. And one of the dangers of the newer ones is it becomes impossible to stop bleeding. But the trouble with warfarin is it interferes with vitamin K. And so we are having people avoid vitamin K, and they have the interference with vitamin K with warfarin. And one of the places where that's affected is osteoporosis creation. We need vitamin K to help shuttle calcium and minerals into our bones, along with the vitamin D. So if that's missing, that's a problem. So we have a real significant long-term side effect because of that. We've teased that out a little bit better. We now think that, well, there's two, there's various types of vitamin K, K1 and K2. And K2 does not seem to be involved in the coagulation process at all, but it does, it's the important one for that important bone structure buildup. So if you happen to be on warfarin, please do a deeper dive into this and learn about the significance of K1 and K2 and the chronic use of warfarin.
Interesting how we started with blood viscosity, and then we discussed circulation, and we also discussed menopause and perimenopause and hormones. And now we're talking about osteoporosis and stomach bleeds. You cannot really talk about one organ when you're talking about a malady or a disease process or an injury. What you really are talking about is an entire body and how it balances itself through nutrient, through circulation, through entire systems that create a healthier person.
Oh, I'd like to say one more thing about a stroke. One of the things we learned in oxidative medicine is that when you have a stroke, like say in your the blood clot in your brain, not only is there the right now acute situation, but as time goes on without proper oxygenation, that area of a brain damaged by the presence of the clot widens.
So you continues to die, even right. After the acute injury. There's right. A continuation of death in the surrounding tissue.
Right. So one of the most important things we learned in treating strokes, as soon as you can get oxidative therapies like ozone, like hydrogen peroxide, like hyperbaric oxygen, getting a stroke victim in a hyperbaric oxygen tank would minimize that collateral damage from a stroke. So this is important things to know. And if this is something going on in your family, be prepared. And the question is, these therapies are good, but how long after a stroke will they still be good? I don't think we quite know the answer to that. The sooner after a stroke you can initiate, the better. I think people have been improved even 2 years after a stroke.
So let's review, since this is so important to us, to all of us, to our health, to our future. Number one, 80 to 88% reduction in cardiovascular and stroke risk comes by donating blood. It's a win-win. Your blood volume goes down And at the same time, you're assisting someone else and allowing them to get healthy blood that can be used if necessary in accidents and injuries. So that's number one. Number two is hydration and maintaining hydration. But we need the hydration that holds into the body. And that's hydration with minerals. There's a doctor Carol was speaking about, famous doctor who used just mineral capsules to create that almost hydrated effect and that reduction of blood clinging in a dehydrated state. Carol, what else should we do?
A reminder to make sure you have hormone balance. Birth control pills are a disaster for blood viscosity. And if you have yourself in a hyperestrogen state, meaning you're having large, heavy bleeds, tender, sore breasts, high anxiety, lots of water retention, fat accumulation sometimes, this is all due to excess estrogen activity as compared to progesterone. And you need the real hormone progesterone to help bring that back into balance. So don't settle. Don't suffer with those symptoms. There are consequences with that high estrogen state that are chronic and can be a sudden heart attack and or stroke.
And the power of antioxidants cannot be underestimated. Vitamin C, the studies with 2,000 milligrams affected cholesterol. Beneath that amount, there was no cholesterol reduction in terms of the damage on the inner arteries. It was a minimum of 2,000 milligrams and above. Vitamin E, we're looking at 200 international units. And I, or up to 400, oh, I have a dog joining me, a puppy dog, up to 400. And I like vitamin E with fish oils. Again, fish oils act very powerfully to break up blood viscosity. And the next thing we discussed are enzymes.
So the enzymes, proteolytic ones, it means that it breaks down protein, and the protein is what constitutes the fibrins that eventually form a clot. So you can safely take proteolytic enzymes, not with meals, in between meals.
Oh, that's important.
Goes into your bloodstream, and that can be protective and keep that tendency to create fibrinogen clots under check, because you'll be digesting it continuously.
Now, Dr. Stephen Sinatra, cardiologist, had a real powerful protocol, and his was CoQ10 always, and that's for protection of the heart muscle. Carnitine, also, again, protection of the heart muscle, and reduction in vascular spasm. He also said vitamin E, which we mentioned. He also said vitamin C, but he also said you cannot underestimate magnesium. Magnesium is essential for heart health and for circulation, and we want to add that to the list. So we got a beautiful little protocol going here that is just moving forward. Now, Carol mentioned vitamin K, and that's K2. And what we find with vitamin K is not that it's a clotter. It's what we call an adaptogen. So it helps if you're bleeding, but it also helps if you're overclotting. It's adaptogenic in terms of your blood circulation. And I use vitamin K with women who are premenopausal and have heavy, heavy clots with their menses. And that's interesting how vitamin K at a higher dose, about 10 milligrams, can help block that clotting and that painful, painful menses. But you also said something else, Carol, that was very interesting to me, and I want to bring it up again. You said our bodies make heparin. Can you explain that to us?
So that's our famous anticoagulation hormone. And if you were to go look it up, there was a lab called Hemex in Phoenix, and a researcher by the name of David Berg, who I listened to, he had a wonderful slide with the whole coagulation processes, and this is very, very complicated. And we talked about many things, and of the many things we've talked about already, they operate in different parts of this whole cascade. What's interesting about our own heparin is that it will act on every single part of our blood clotting reaction. So it's the universal blood thinner. So why don't we use it all the time? Actually, it's a good question. We could be using small doses injected, and that has been used in the past. If you go into the hospital and after the emergency ride, you'll be given heparin, most likely, to help break up any clots. So I think it's very underused and underutilized hormone we should pay more attention to. But now, it could be done.
And it has a very short activity window, which makes it very nice and easy to use because it's not long life. You give a shot and it's not there in the evening. I think it's 45 minutes of activity, which makes it acute and active. When I have young women doubled over with pain in terms of menstrual pain, I take a little syringe of heparin and give it to them so that when they're home, they can put a drop of it under their tongue in low levels. I know the whole dose is a very low level, and it breaks up some of the pain. People feel less pain. Also, with young women who have very severe fibromyalgia, at certain times it goes into spasm, and I give them heparin drops that they put under their tongue. Now, the pain doesn't go away completely, but there's a significant reduction in the pain and in the spasm because you've restored circulation to the area that is having that spasm.
We've covered a very, very complex subject today.
Really? I noticed. My head is spinning. I'm going, oh, how to make this understandable.
and it's interesting how much we should be concerned about heart attacks and strokes, that we've covered some really basic information. As you mentioned before, we've known this for 40 years, that blood viscosity is an issue. And we should be paying attention to not only what causes it, which we haven't even started there, but we can talk about causes maybe another time, but remedies, how you fix this sluggish blood, and it's going to be to your advantage. Anytime you do not have circulation going into those little capillaries and things, those parts of your body are starved for oxygen. And that translates into pain. When any part of your body, your body tissue, does not get enough oxygen to its tissues, that will set up a painful area. So this whole thing about thickened blood can also be tied up into a lot of chronic pain situations.
Well, I see it when I draw blood on people who are not well or chronically ill. And I see that thickened blood. I can feel it. I can see it in the way the blood draws. I used to be able to have a microscope and we could look at it. But in the state of New York, we can't any longer. It's not a legal medical tool to have a microscope in the office. But in Jersey and in other states, they use it regularly as a part of holistic care. And I think it's important to be able to have it. It can be beneficial and give us another eye into creating health. You know, it's not about taking away symptoms, although it's really nice when the symptoms are gone, but it's not nice when the symptoms are gone and the disease is progressing. Which we see with diabetes, we take away the symptoms and diabetes progresses. Which we see with hypertension, we take away much of the pressure, but the atherosclerosis not only persists, it also progresses. That's a thickening of the veins and arteries, which makes heart attack even more likely. So it's nice to take away symptoms, but only when we're taking away the base cause simultaneously. Because symptoms are important. They're our flashing light that tells us the engine needs a check. And without that flashing light, I personally would continue driving and not go about dealing with the problem. And last but not least, I'm going to mention something that Jonathan Wright brought up, and it is hearing loss, sudden hearing loss, and even to some degree progressive hearing loss can be a direct result of blood viscosity. And that is very interesting. You know, we've gone from organ to organ to organ. But what we're looking at is blood viscosity and circulation. And so he's including hearing loss. And I'm going to include vision loss, vision reduction, reduced circulation, and a cause of eventual blindness that happens with diabetic patients whose circulation becomes so literally so mucked up, so reduced by such high sugar levels that the circulation can't deal or move through the minute capillaries in the eyes and in the ears.
Yeah, what an excellent point. And it seems to me, now that I'm getting older, I'm noticing more and more my friends struggling with their hearing. And maybe it's the reason everybody's turning to reading glasses when they as they're aging. We didn't need them before. Why do we need them now? So it's a good question, and I think deserves a little more inspection. Why, with aging, are we associating these diseases of loss of hearing and loss of sight, and maybe even perhaps things like neuropathies? There's a lot of that involved in diabetes, and a lot of people with these odd nerve pains in their hands and feet. So it all might be down to a specific underlying principle where the blood is not flowing adequately to the tissue that needs it.
You know, when we started, I told Carol, I said, this isn't an hour talk. This is about a half an hour. And yet what has happened is when Carol and I get talking and start really sorting out an issue and really go into depth on an issue, it is amazing how it spreads out to all organs, to the entire body, and it takes up time to focus, to explain. But heart disease and heart attacks are something we should all understand. I hope you go back and listen to this show so that you can take the precautions necessary to protect your heart, to protect yourself, to protect your health. It's all of this is worthwhile, to say the least. I was searching for a better word, but let's stick with worthwhile right now because I'm under the gun, and life-changing, or can be. It's not about hearing. It's about acting. It's about doing. And if you take this information and do, this can be life-changing.
I'd like to include a little historic story. There were two brothers who practiced medicine in Toronto, the Shute brothers, and they hit it on using vitamin E. In fact, way back when, we kind of liked wheat germ oil for as a source for vitamin E.
Oh, I remember. Yes.
So the Shute brothers pioneered using vitamin E for cardiovascular disease. And they became so famous, literally, people would line up outside of their office to see the doctors to get vitamin E. I'm thinking these days we think about drug-seeking behavior, people looking for pain reliever. To think that there would be lines of people waiting to get information and supplies for vitamin E just makes me smile.
What different days those were. So we've had quite a chock-full information talk today. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Like I said before, my head is spinning with so many thoughts and so much information. And I hope you understand that this is information to benefit you. But the only way you benefit is not hearing it and not knowing it, but doing it. And doing it creates all the difference. It'll create the difference in your family. It'll create the difference in your community. So doing it is where the power comes in. And it comes in not just doing it once. What we're talking about is a consistency. Health is consistency. We all know that water or fluids are healthy to drink. One glass of fluid in a day does not change the health. It's a consistency throughout the day, day after day, month after month, year after year. That's where health comes from. That's where it comes from in exercise. That's where it comes in nutrients. That's where it comes in self-protection and maintaining health in our body is the consistency. Haven't you seen that, Carol?
Yes. Actually, it seems that those people who do take charge of their life and do incorporate into their daily lives things that promote health, the art of wellness.
The art of wellness.
Are those who succeed in creating a lifestyle that serves them well. And I think all you have to do is look around to see who they are. As people age, if you see somebody aging rapidly, you know they're on the wrong track. They're making wrong choices. You see other people who carry a vibrance with them into their 70s, 80s, 90s, and you know they've made right choices for their body, for themselves.
I love, and this is a totally other subject that we're going to have to discuss more thoroughly another time, but I love a degree of vegetable juices. I think the juicing from the vegetable, particularly organic fresh vegetable, allows the nutrient to be absorbed more easily without digestion. And the end result is this people who juice with a degree of regularity, it doesn't have to be every day, but with a degree of regularity, have a glow to their skin, a glow to their eyes that I love to see. So, Carol, it's always a pleasure. I always learn, and I know the audience does too. So thank you for being here with me.
Thank you. I equally learn, and I so appreciate our audience for tuning in. And it's a pleasure for helping people find tools to take charge of their health.
We'll be back next week, and please go on our Facebook page. Give us suggestions about what you want to hear. This, although we do the show, it's really about you. So give us suggestions about areas that you want us to focus on, and we'll be glad to. It will be a pleasure. You'll hear your topic thoroughly discussed in the future. So we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. You can hear this program in its entirety on my Facebook, Corinne Fornari, RPA, CCN, or on Take Charge of Your Health Facebook page, Take Charge of Your Health. My website is fornarihealth.com, and my office number is 212-219-0700. That's 212-219-0700. And I know many of you noticed that beautiful music, a big change. My brother's group wrote it for me, Left Hook from Redding, California. Their website is Redding Left Hook. Really special. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.